This is Genevieve for Now You Know. Today we will be listening to Catherine and Rob Laidlaw, animal advocate, author, and founder of the Canadian-based wildlife protection charity, ZooCheck, on the concept of framing. Welcome to Now You Know with Catherine and Jen.
So Rob, what exactly is framing?
Framing is one of the design tricks used when animals are exhibited to make the animal look like it's in a more natural circumstance than it actually is. And the best way to think about it is like framing a picture, and that's exactly why it's called framing. So let's give an example for people that are listening. Let's say you had a zebra on a patch of earth. Well, that patch of earth, if it was just standing on its own, most people would look at that and say, well, that's not very good. You know, there's a zebra standing on a patch of earth. But if you put a nice green background behind the zebra, and that could be vegetation or it could be other kinds of features, but of course the zebra doesn't have any access to it. It's just a background. So if you put that there, and if you put a nice green zone of vegetation on either side of the exhibit, and if you put a nice little buffer of vegetation at the front where people are viewing, basically when people look at that zebra, they're seeing it enveloped in a green background, sides, and front. So it's a in essence a frame. The animal is framed. And the way it works is that when people look at that, and most zoo visitors are just casual visitors, they're not, you know, examining every exhibit, and they're not particularly discerning, and they may not even know much about the animals they're looking at. They'll walk along from that kind of exhibit with a zebra to another exhibit to another exhibit, and they'll be left with the impression that you have that zebra and other animals in this beautiful green environment. It's really more of a psychological trick than anything else. So framing is a way of sanitizing the view for visitors that are looking at animals. And like I said, it's just one of many design tricks that are used to make things appear better than they actually are.
So framing essentially fools visitors into thinking a zoo is better than it is?
It can. You know, if you have a whole bunch of very poor exhibits that are, you know, framed very well, the design, you know, is such that the illusion that it's trying to create actually works, then yeah, it will actually fool people. And I've encountered this many, many times in many kinds of zoos where people walk through a zoo, and the Toronto Zoo is a good example, where they'll walk through and they'll have the impression that the zoo is this lush green park-like environment with lots of naturalistic space for the animals. But if you then walk them through and show them some of the design tricks that fooled them on their previous go around the zoo, their eyes are really open and they see things very differently. So it's something that, you know, not very many people think about or know about. But if you know what to look for, you can see not only framing, but a variety of other kinds of tactics and strategies that are used to sanitize the view and make it look better for visitors.
So could you lay out for me a little bit what a visitor can do to be able to make that distinction between a natural habitat or a naturalistic habitat versus framing that's going on?
I think what people have to look for first and foremost is the actual living space for the animal. And it's funny because, you know, in many facilities that people think are very good, when I take people around and I say, stand there and look at what space the animal actually has access to, once they've gone through that exercise, and it only takes a few seconds, they're actually appalled at a lot of what they see, and they weren't appalled previously. So sometimes it's just, you know, prompting people to look a little bit closer at what's in front of them and doing a little bit of critical thinking. And that can be applied to other things as well. You can say, okay, that animal has vegetation all around it. Is that vegetation actually accessible to that animal? 9 times out of 10, particularly for big animals like gorillas and elephants and other animals like that that have this potential to be destructive to vegetation, it's not accessible to those animals. They would love to have it, you know, to be able to manipulate, to tear it up, to eat it, to play with it. but most times it's not. So people can look at what is actually available in terms of vegetation and other things around the enclosure, and they can look in the enclosure as well to see, you know, what is in there that would actually keep an animal occupied if it's in that particular living space for days, weeks, months, or years. A lot of it is really applying common sense. You don't need to be a field biologist. You don't need to be a zoologist or a veterinarian or have a PhD in ethology. You know, a lot of it is just common sense. And if you have questions and think things are, you know, perhaps not the way they really should be, a great way for people to, you know, determine whether their feeling is valid or not, is just to do a tiny bit of research on some of the animals that they've looked at. And that will often expose just how bad conditions are in zoos, even those conditions where the design tricks have been used to make things look better. You can see it if you know what to look for in aquariums. You know, a lot of them look natural, but just like their terrestrial counterpart exhibits in zoos, I think what you're seeing in many of these instances is more an illusion. It's a lot more reminiscent of a movie set or something like that, maybe an amusement park environment, than it is real nature.
So do you recommend that we all boycott zoos?
I think boycotts have to be used strategically because they quickly become tiresome and their effectiveness is diluted if too many people try to do it too often. And I think in the case of zoos, there's just far too many people going to them. I just couldn't see a boycott except in a very specific kind of circumstance being an effective strategy for changing things. I think the best thing that people can do is to apply that critical thinking, do a little research, and to speak out on behalf of animals, because that old saying that all it takes for evil to triumph is for good to do nothing is very true. So I think, you know, you have to look at the animals. Are they in natural conditions? Do they have space to move? Do they have stimulation? Do they have an ability to engage in species-typical movements and behaviors in the environments in which they're forced to live? And are they able to use many, if not all, of the other adaptations that they have evolved with to live in particular kinds of environments? And if they can't, then I think probably the zoo or the facility, at least in my opinion, wouldn't qualify as reputable.
Is there one simple action a person could take? If you had to pick just one action to help, you know, with this problem of framing, is there any way to distill that down in a nutshell what that would be?
It's very difficult to say because there's a whole suite of actions that people can take. But what I would say is probably, you know, considered a cliche, but I would say the most effective action you can take is just not to give those facilities that are not at a standard that's acceptable your money. So don't go.
Wow, that interview was amazing, Catherine. I had known about the concept of framing myself, having worked in a zoological institutions in the captivity industry, but I had never realized there was a name that was associated to it. So I think that was really instructive and interesting. I like one of the points that he brought up regarding just you using common sense. You know, when he talks about not needing to be a veterinarian or a zoologist or being versed in ethology, I think that was really amazing. I think as a message, what we should just tell people is to be conscious of their surroundings and say something when they see something that's not right.
And I think this is a really important message to spread, because I don't know how it is in Quebec, but in Ontario alone, where I live, we have a whole bunch, I think it's over 31 roadside zoos. So I don't know if you've been on the highway and you've ever driven by signs like between Montreal and Toronto for Jungle Cat World and places like that. But the truth is, a place like that, you know, is just not the same as going to even the Toronto Zoo, which in and of itself is not a perfect, you know, example of, you know, animals in their most natural possible habitat that captivity can provide. But it's definitely a very different tier than something like one of the roadside zoos. So I think a lot of people are just not aware. I'm a parent, and a lot of the parents that I hang out with are constantly telling me that they've just taken their children to places that I would never even consider taking my daughter to because I work in this industry. And when I start explaining to them that a zoo is not a zoo is not a zoo, there are different tiers of zoos, they immediately are captivated because most people love animals and most people especially love wild animals. And what they're trying to do when they take their children to a zoo is educate their child. When I tell them, they may actually be kind of doing the opposite, miseducating, unbeknownst to them. They are all ears as to how they can do a better job of this.
And I think, you know, on your side of your parent, I'm not, but I'm from that, you know, selfie generation who likes to take selfies with everything original that you can post on Instagram, Facebook, right. Twitter. So what I feel I see around me, so my friends and friends of friends, is a lot of people that will, not necessarily zoos, but, you know, just a simple activity of swimming with dolphins, for example, or elephant rides. Some of those zoos offer these activities. And often I find myself in a situation where I'm like, the person is super excited to share their experience with me because they know I love animals and they can kind of tell from my tone and my face that I'm not too thrilled. So I always come off of the as the party pooper because I try to educate them, but sometimes it's like not really the place. They're just trying to share a fun vacation moment or a picture. And I'm just there being like, oh, did you know, that's not cool. Or did you know where these animals come from? So I feel sometimes if that message could come from, you know, a celebrity, a person that has a bit more impact, that would be really cool.
I can totally relate to that party pooper feeling. I get that all the time. But Mike, I have a question for you. Do you also sometimes feel like you're giving people light bulb moments when, you know, you start talking about these things that you know about?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And some people, including my closest friends, I've done the research after I just planted the seed. I'm like, look, we can talk about this now, or I can refer you to, for example, Blackfish or some movies that will kind of open up your mind a little bit. And if you want to talk about it a bit more, I'm here. But often I just kind of plant that seed and be like, I'm here if you want to talk about it more. But just so you know, there's more to the picture than you can actually see. I think it's important for people to understand that it's not zoos are the mean people and the PETA people are the nice people or the animal activism. I think if we explain to people that there's a bit of nuances, for example, we're explaining that not zoos are the same. Again, in the same zoo, you could have an animal that is doing wonderfully. Their exhibit is amazing. They have access to everything. They have enrichment. But then again, in that same zoo, you could have an animal that's doing miserably. Yeah, that can happen. It's not because one exhibit is nice, the other isn't, that, you know, people will necessarily decide, oh, that whole zoo altogether I should avoid. Maybe what you could do is, you know, call that zoo or write to them and say like, oh, for example, that exhibit was amazing, but I do have concern about that other animal that didn't seem to be doing all that well, that didn't seem to have as natural as of an environment that it could.
You know, if you find all of this too complex and tiring, the other option is to just go out into nature or a park or participate in some ecotourism.
Ecotourism is actually a wonderful option.
Looking economically, not everybody can afford to go participate in ecotourism. But on the flip side, not everybody, as Dr. Visser said when we were speaking at the Senate together, not everybody can afford to go to a location with a major zoo, because major zoos are, or, you know, governmentally run zoos are often in larger urban centers, such as like in our country, we have them in, you know, all of the major cities, well, a lot of the major cities.
Absolutely.
But I think it is something worth noting that no, not everybody can go, you know, to participate in, you know, in ecotourism, but we have such wonderful alternatives now. We have, you know, we have the internet. There are, you know, zoos that use animatronics entirely. There's a zoo in Japan called Orbi Zoo, and you go into Orbi Zoo. I've never been there, but I've heard from others. Have you heard about Orbi Zoo?
I did. I think it's a wonderful idea.
Apparently, you're in one room and you're surrounded by screens on all sides, and all of a sudden the room will become freezing cold. The floor underneath you begins to like shake and crack, and you're in the Arctic. And then the next thing you know, you're running with a herd of wildebeests across the savanna, or all of a sudden you're a bird and you're flying, you know, in a flock. And you know, so it's just an incredible experience. So there are alternatives. There's always an alternative for everyone. There's always different options in terms of, you know, financially what those alternatives would be. And nobody's ever going to be able to participate in everything. But we cannot use money as a justification for supporting zoos that are not properly taking care of animals.
And I think that's true in every single area of life, not just animal activism or rights. Like, it's not because you have less money that you should be willing to support the suffering or the destruction of our planet or the people or the living beings that live on it.
Well, after listening to Rob speak on this, I think it should be something like, not all zoo exhibits are the same. Speak out on behalf of animals if you see something wrong. Or maybe it could be something like, exhibits should put the animals first.
Yeah, I think that's a great message. And it kind of, you know, summarizes everything we're trying to say. And it just puts, you know, a clear message to what we're trying to say.
Okay, so yes, I think let's just go with the first part of that. Not all zoo exhibits are the same. Speak out on behalf of animals if you see something wrong. I like it. Perfect. Do you like it?
I love it. It's perfect.